You know, it seems like the value of organization and planning is relative to the kind of person that you are. Some are very structured and organized. We'll call them the ducks in a row bunch. While others are more free-spirited and disheveled, and we'll call them the water running off the duck's back group. But regardless of your orientation, everyone, I think, understands the importance of some planning and organization, whether it be in the church, business, the home, or when you're stealing fine arts. Like the thief who was caught after stealing some paintings from the Louvre in Paris when his getaway van ran out of fuel. Given bail at his first hearing, a reporter asked him on the steps of the courthouse how he forgot such a vital part of his plan. He said, "Simple," said the thief, "I had no Monet for Degas to Van the Go." And so all this brings us to Exodus 18, where Moses is reunited with his father-in-law and gets some good organizational advice from him. So if you can find Exodus 18, I promise you it's right after Exodus 17 and before 19. Now, Moses and Jethro's relationship was not a typical father-in-law-son-in-law relationship. They actually liked each other. Remember, it was in Jethro's house that Moses found care and support after fleeing from Egypt. He married Jethro's daughter, Zipporah, and made a home in Midian before being called back to Egypt. As we'll see, a lot of things come together in this 18th chapter of Exodus. So let me read just the first 8 verses of Exodus 18. It says, "Now Jethro, the priest of Midian and father-in-law of Moses, heard of everything God had done for Moses and for his people Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. After Moses had sent his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro received her and her 2 sons. One was named Gershom, for Moses said, 'I have become an alien in a foreign land.' And the other was named Eleazar, for he said, 'My father's God was my helper. He saved me from the sword of Pharaoh.' Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' son and wife, came to him in the desert where he was camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent word to him, 'I, your father-in-law, Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her 2 sons.'" I wonder why he said her 2 sons, but maybe that's a typical grandpa. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships they met along the way and how the Lord had saved them. Now there's a couple of things we need to unpack here to appreciate what is going on. First, there is no recorded place in Exodus where Moses sends his wife and sons away. So these verses really invite some speculation as far as just as what is being referred to when he does that. Now, it may be in that incident in Exodus 4 where you remember that it's actually a short time after they've left Jethro's home, where there's this incident where God is kind of dealing with Moses and the fact that most likely he hadn't circumcised his son, and Moses is kind of getting disciplined for that. So Zipporah actually circumcises her son, touches Moses' leg with his foreskin, and then has some kind of crude comment to make to Moses that you've become a blood relative to me. But it wasn't a nice thing she was saying. So was it at that point that Zipporah returned to her father's house? Or maybe it was when they were in the midst of the plagues. You know, it was kind of getting dicey in Egypt. And maybe Moses said, you know, with all I have to do in dealing with Pharaoh and Aaron and all these things, maybe it's better, you know, Zipporah, for you to go home and be with your dad. Or maybe it might have been at the instigation or at the start of the Exodus. In other words, knowing what God has done, knowing that eventually he's going to go back to the mountain where he met God when he was watching Jethro's sheep, knowing that's going to be in the era that Jethro was in, basically he sends Zipporah maybe before them to let Jethro know what's happening and the fact they're going to be in town. And maybe that is the best explanation, because that really explains how Jethro would know what's happening in the first place in terms of coming out and meeting Moses. But I think the second thing to unpack is just who is this Jethro, this priest of Midian. I mean, if you remember in Exodus chapter 4, when Moses comes into his family by saving his daughters from the guys at the well, and remember that story? He's actually called the priest of God in that context. And so what I want you to do is I want you to look at Genesis 25, verses 1 through 6. And I'm going to ask Bob or Gil to bring that up. If you want to turn in your Bibles, you certainly can feel free to that. But we can also look at the screen and notice an interesting point in terms of just what the Bible tells us about the Midianites. And this is something without, you know, the word commentary bringing this up. I probably wouldn't have caught this myself. But it says Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. Verse 2, she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, and Midian, Ishbak. Okay, we didn't need to get that other name anyways. Like, you're really going to remember Shua, right? So verse 3, it's okay. But just notice Midian is there. Jokshan was the father of Sheba and Dedan. The descendants of Dedan were the Asherites, the Letushites, and the Lemuelites. The sons of Midian were Ephah, Epher, Hanak, Abida, and Eldad. That's probably all wrong. All these were descendants of Keturah. And then verse 5, Abram left everything he owned to Isaac. Verse 6, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the lands of the east. And so therefore we see in this passage that effectively Midian is a relation of Abraham. So therefore the Midianites were at first connected to the faith of God. They were aware of Yahweh. They were aware of Jehovah in terms of just Abraham's relationship with him and the call that he had on his life to leave Ur and come to Palestine. And so ultimately, when we understand that Jethro, in Moses' life, is called the priest of God of Midian, what we know that what has happened in this tribe that came from Midian is a man that the faith of Abraham, the faith of God, continued through that. And although that they were sent away, their faith in Yahweh was such that Jethro could still be a priest of God. But it's also interesting to think about just what Jethro represents in terms of now him coming to Moses. See, because what the Midianites were is they were a nomadic group of people. In fact, what you find throughout the scriptures, when you talk about the divisions that happened, both in terms of Cain and Seth, Jacob and Esau, Abraham and the Ishmael and Isaac, that it seems like there's always this strain that is the God-honored, God-following strain, and then this other path or stream of people that end up being separated from that and oftentimes becoming nomadic in terms of their activity in the world. And the Midianites were nomadic. They were people that really didn't have a settled place, whereas the Israelites were a settled people, that they had a defined place that God had sent them. So what is interesting to consider is whether what is represented here in Exodus 18 is not only the reunion of Moses with his family, but two aspects of the family of Abraham coming together. Read verses 9 through 12 with me to see kind of how there may be a greater indication of that in this passage here. It says, Jethro was just delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. He said, praise be to the Lord who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses, his father-in-law, in the presence of God. Now, understanding first that when Jethro comes to Moses, what does Moses do? Moses bows down to Jethro. Now, there may be in that a respect to the fact that he's his father-in-law, but realize Moses is the head of Israel. Moses is the guy. Like, the guy that God is talking to, that's Moses. And so now he comes before his father-in-law and bows before him. See, I see in that not only a recognition of him as his father-in-law, but also as the priest of God. Now to understand beyond that, that now Jethro is really conducting this really sanctified moment. Like this is, if you had a snapshot of like kind of the important moments or the neat God things that God was doing in their travels, this would be one of them. Well, wait, where Jethro makes a sacrifice, there's an altar, there's a burnt offering, and basically who comes together is Jethro, Aaron, and the elders of the tribes of Israel. Now notice who is not mentioned there. Moses is not mentioned there, right? Now, it's probably presumed that Moses would be there, but it's interesting to me that he's not mentioned. And why is that? Because who is the mediator? Who is the one who has a connection with both streams of faith from Abraham's faith? It's Moses, right? So in other words, the writer doesn't have to emphasize the fact that Moses is there, because maybe it's presumed that he would be there, or he's just not an important participant. What's important is that Jethro was there, and he's representing this nomadic strain of faith, that this part of Abraham's family that was still faithful to God, faithful to faith, and they're coming together. They're coming together to be united in terms of their recognition of God, their recognition of what God has done through Israel, which I think is very significant. You know, some people actually question, why is this, if this is a reunion that's happening between those two strains of Abraham's family, why is it happening before Sinai? I mean, it's very interesting that Exodus 18 comes before Exodus 19. It's not just numerical. That basically, the Exodus 19 is the time that they start the process of meeting God. That ultimately he's going to tell them, you know something, you're going to come up to the mountain, I'm going to give you my law, I'm going to give you my decrees, get ready. Wash yourselves, clean yourselves, don't touch the mountain. All those instructions are going to happen in Exodus 19. And so some people say, well, wait a minute, wouldn't they meet God first? And then it would be right in terms of instruction about organization or relationship with another strain of Abraham's family. But you know what this is reminiscent to me of? Is what does Jesus say? If you come to the altar and you're there and you want to fellowship with God and God reminds you that there's something wrong with a relationship that you have, there's something offensive in terms of your relationship with your brother, even more so a family member, a cousin, a brother, a father, a son, a daughter, leave your altar there. Leave your gift there. Go be reconciled to your brother and then come back and talk to God. You know, regardless of what we might think and the conclusions you come to in terms of just what is happening and the significance, again, of Jethro being there, something we can know is that God cares about family. That family is something that God has established. It's something that he desires for us to glean from and for us to operate in and for us to ultimately have good relationship in terms of what he's trying to foster, what he's trying to do. Because ultimately, what God is always trying to foster in families is reconciliation. Well, what God is always trying to foster in families is a harmony in terms of love, respect, and coordinated effort so that as a family that we're nurturing and we're encouraging each other to be built up in our person so we find our purpose in Christ and then we're encouraged in what that purpose is rather than being discouraged. Rather than learning a lack of value from family, we learn our value from family. And God thinks that's very important. I believe that's part of what's happening here in this vitally significant chapter of the Bible. You know, particularly, again, how this verse 12 is just framed in terms of, you know, here's Jethro, the priest of God, giving the sacrifice to Aaron, who will be the future high priest. You know, so people reading that, from Israel after Aaron is installed and it's Aaron's children that are the high priests of Israel. Wait a minute. Who's this guy Jethro? Notice how often his name is put in here. Who's this guy Jethro that Aaron is receiving a sacrifice from? He's the one that's conducting this sacrifice and this honoring of God. It's all done in God's presence. And so therefore, I think God is trying to highlight something in terms of just what is happening on a human dynamic and unity being expressed before they actually go and worship God. Now, one thing that I want to bring up before we move on that's going to sound like two is just what is happening here in terms of Jethro. That when it says in verse 9 here, I mean, just don't miss this. Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. I mean, just imagine being able to hear Moses talk about what God had done for Israel. Think about hearing from Moses about the plagues and all the things that God did there. And then the Red Sea and the parting of the Red Sea. And then the manna and the quail and the water from the rock and the tree they threw in the water. It became sweet after being bitter. I mean, wouldn't that be exciting to sit down with Moses and hear him speak that? Well, see, Jethro had heard about this in some other way. He had heard about it from a distance, but now he's hearing it firsthand. And you know something? That's the testimony. That's the power, rather, of testimony. That's the power of us sharing in each other's lives to the extent that when we hear someone speak about what God has done for them, we're encouraged in our faith that God becomes bigger to us because God has proved himself bigger in someone else's life. And so that's what we have to think about. Like as we're sharing our faith, and we're sharing testimony, whether it be publicly here, in front of many people, or just individually. See, it's not about us bragging about ourselves. It's about us bragging about God and who He is. Because all of us can use our understanding of God being expanded for us to recognize just how powerful and great God is and how in various way He moves, in various way He works. And we never know how something that we've been through is going to connect with someone else's life. And so that's what happens in terms of Moses. Me and Bugs, I tell you. What happens with Jethro here. But then when he says here in verse 11, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods, for he did this to those who treated Israel arrogantly." This is not Jethro making an initial profession of faith. This is Jethro having his faith confirmed. That again, in terms of everything we've known of Jethro up to this point, he is a believer. You don't get called a priest of God without being a believer. But even as a priest of God, even a one who had that faith, after hearing what Moses, he's affirmed. That faith is greater. That faith is bigger. And I think that's what God desires to do in our lives, for our faith to be affirmed in terms of what he does. Again, either in our life or someone else's life. And so now let's move on in terms of just the rest of the passage, at least reading to verse 23 from verse 13. It says, "The next day Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?' Moses answered him, 'Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and laws.' Moses' father-in-law replied, 'What you're doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to Him. Teach them the decrees and laws and show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain and all these people will go home satisfied." So let me just work through some sort of theoretical points very quickly, then move to the practical, because I do believe that this is an important passage, particularly when we find ourselves here at Living Hope Christian Church. It says, first, it's very important for those in leadership to be open to ideas and advice. Very important for those in leadership to be open to advice and ideas. I mean, you have to understand the amount of humility that Moses is expressing here. Again, like I said, he's God's guy. Like, he very well could respond to Jethro and say, wait a minute, who are you to talk to me? Don't you realize just yesterday I talked to God? I had a private conversation? You know, don't you realize the people come to me and they get the answers that God wants to give them? But see, Moses isn't doing that, right? Moses is ultimately going to receive what his father-in-law says and recognizes the value in it. Because again, the value of truth, the value of instruction is not based on the person who gives it, but on the truth itself. And even if truth is coming from a wrong source, it's good to be open to the value of what that is. Second, it's important in any organization, but because we're in a church and we're talking about living hope, let's say especially in church, for any organization, it's important for there to be as much involvement as possible. See, ultimately, it helps the church and the organization, but it also helps the individual involved. I mean, all of us understand the whole idea of what Jethro is telling Moses here, that many hands make light work. That ultimately, the more people you have involved, guess what, Moses? You won't have to bear that burden. The people also won't have to wait as long. Everyone's going to be benefited by that just by expanding the workload and letting other people carry a burden for you, Moses. But I think another way that an organization, a church, is benefited by having more people involved is that the gifts, the talents, the personalities that each individual brings is valuable in and of itself. I mean, just imagine what Israel would be missing if Moses didn't select these people. See, there's something that only Moses as a human being could bring to the dynamic. But you know something, when you expand that, and now there's 100 people, there's 200 people, there's 500 people involved in that process. So that's 500 more people that can hear from God. That's 500 more talents and gifts and abilities that can be used to the benefit of the people. And so therefore, what happens in terms of more involvement in a church, more involvement in an organization, is everything becomes enriched. Everything becomes enriched in terms of now, what is your relationship with God like? What is your understanding of God like? And even if it's different from mine, there's probably something that I can glean from that. And I think the most important thing any church can do is make clear that it's open, that it's available, that we're not trying to hold onto positions because we want a fiefdom. No, wait a minute, I take care of Sunday school, so no one else is going to do that. That's not me, that would be Gary saying that. You know, you don't think about taking care of teens because I'm there and I'm the leader and you listen to me. No, in other words, we desire for you to connect with the giftedness that God has given you through His Spirit. And just understand, the Bible says that gift is given to you for the edification of the body. For the edification of the church. And the church, again, is not a building. It's really not an organization. It is a family. And ultimately, we as a body coming together to assemble a body that is now pleasing to Christ and needs to have every aspect involved. And so there's no place, no place for anyone to say, I don't have a part. There's no place for anyone to say, I don't have a gift. Because guess what? By virtue of being a believer, you have a gift. And so therefore, that gift, God desires to share that in a certain way. And again, we would be missing something. When you're not here in church, we are missing something just by virtue of you not being here. If you're not expressing your gifts in terms of the body, we're missing something in terms of what God would seek to accomplish. But you know something? When it comes to people involving themselves, it's not only value to the organization, it's not only a value to the church, it's a value to the individual. Because you know something? The truest value, the truest joy when it comes to anything is when that thing is expressed, right? It's not enough to say, I want to be able to shoot a basket and get the ball in. It's not enough to say, I think I can shoot a basket and get the ball in. It's really about shooting the basket and getting the ball in. It's not looking at the weight bench and saying, you know something, I think I can bench that. You know, I'm really pumped up because I can bench that. No, the pump up, the value is when you actually lift that weight. You know, it's only when you actually express your gifts. I'm trying to connect with people that aren't about sports. Afghans. Or you paint the picture. Or you cook the meal. See, in other words, it's when you stand back And the expression is given, right? That's the true value. I mean, if you just sat around and talked to the girls and say, you know, I can make a really great Afghan. You know, I have the visions of this and the colors. Of it doesn't mean anything until you're, I don't even know how you make, you're sewing or threading. Or however you make Afghans, you're doing it is what matters. Now think exponentially. Exponentially, God has placed his power, and more than his power, his very being inside of you. Well, let me ask you, what is the greatest expression of that power? The fact that it resides in you, or that it comes out of you? See, that's when the power of God is truly experienced. That's what the joy of service is. The joy of service is not in the fact that I get to help people. That people smile at me and they say, thank you, I'm glad you really did. No, it's the fact that I as a human being have an opportunity for the power of God to flow through me. See, that goes beyond just having the power in me, that it's expressed through me. And that's the power of involvement. Because you know something, the bottom line is this. Well, in terms of how I think we should internalize this message, because I think there's a Kairos moment here. I think that Living Hope is in a very unique place engaging with this text right now. I'll tell you why. The least important part is it's not crazy to think that in a month we'll have a new parking lot. Okay? And I don't know how God is going to use it. That is going to radically increase the value of God's property here, and I think it's going to make it more attractive in a very big way. So we do that, and we ask God to use that in whatever way he sees fit to draw people unto himself in terms of how this building looks. But the more important thing is the fact that right now we're going through this Not a Fan study. I'm never going to emphasize numbers. We have at least 60 people that are going through this Not a Fan study. And I'm just aware of the people that I can think of. I don't even know who's reading on the sidelines, reading the book at home or whatever it might be. But ultimately what we have is about a third of the congregation that is asking themselves the question, am I a fan or am I a follower of Jesus? And you know, what's crucial about that question is you have to answer it. And you have to come to a place to say, see, even if you decide that you're a fan, then guess what? At least that's a resolved decision that you make before God, even to the extent of before this congregation, that's where I am with God. But to understand the value that will come to individuals' lives, what value will come to this body when people say, no, I don't want to be a fan of Jesus. I want to be a follower of Jesus. I want to be committed to him. I do want to take up my cross. I do want to lay down my life. I do want to give of myself. See, it is my heart first before it's my possessions. It's my heart first before it's service. It is relationship with God first and making sure that's right before I do anything for God. I think the most significant thing that I learned in the Not a Fan, I like the phrase that was used, is that the Christian life is not about trying, it's about dying. Because you know something? I hear a lot of people, me, I have a good friend that talks about trying in the Christian life. Now, I'm not talking about me right now, I'm just talking about a good friend. See, when we say, but God, I'm trying at that. You know, Sid, there's a vestige of pride. There's a vestige of holding on. See, because you know something? I can give 10% effort and still say, I'm trying, right? I mean, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing nothing about that. I'm trying. But see, dying is complete. Dying is total. And ultimately, God doesn't ask us to try. He doesn't want your effort. He wants you effectively out of the picture. He wants you dead so that he can live through you. Just think about the vision that Paul gives of his Christian life in Galatians 2:20, and when he says, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live through my faith in Jesus Christ. Can you imagine getting to the point where you look at your life and you say, this is not even me? Like, Peter Akin doesn't exist anymore. Whatever your name is, Philip, I don't even exist. I no more. It's not me living. It's Jesus lived. The life I live in the body, I live through Jesus. And that's what flows from me, through me. That's what I desire for people to see. That's what I desire to be promoted. Not me, but Christ. You know, and I'm encouraging people in terms of the Not a Fan study to think about so what. Like okay, so what? So you're a follower. What does that mean? In practical terms, if I want to say that I'm a follower in Jesus, what is that going to mean in terms of my life? But you know something? I think in addition to these things, there are some drastic changes coming in the next year or two as far as Living Hope Christian Church. First and foremost is Rick Bringhurst feels the call to be a pastor. Okay, and we never take that lightly. You know, because ultimately now, what we have as a job for our congregation to decide is whether we agree with him, realistically. Not that I wouldn't, Rick. You understand why I'm saying this. I'm not saying that I agree that Rick is a pastor in terms of what the giftedness that he has. But see, this is where we as a congregation both decide, how do we determine that? How do we decide that? But if Rick is called to be a pastor, what does that mean for us? You know, is that him in terms of God's leading in his life, that he goes out to a congregation that already exists and becomes pastor of that congregation, and we send him and Kelly off and say, God bless, and, you know, we'll write you a Christmas or whatever? Or is... Okay, maybe more than that. But is it Rick is raised up with a body of people here to go out and start a church, to be a door to work in terms of Living Hope Christian Church. I mean that you know, regardless, what it means for us is it likely that 2 years from now Rick and Kelly won't be here? Probably. And I tell you, they are part of the foundations of this church. I assure you that what we are as Living Hope is on a great part because of them. I mean, there's counsel, there's advice, there's a direction that he support that they give me, that we would be very different in terms of that. It's fair to say that next year Steve will be retiring. You know, so who knows what that's going to mean for Steve and Cammie. Ray is not always going to be the spry young man that he is today. You know, who knows what Ray's health is? You know, let me say this about Mike and Beth, that many of you may not know, is that Mike and Beth actually had an opportunity to take on a staff position at a larger congregation that would take care of their financial needs for their family. And you know something? I said to Mike and Beth, we would miss you, we would hate to, but you know, if God is leading you there and God makes a provision, God bless you. We are spoiled to have Mike and Beth. We are spoiled to have such invigorated and powerful worship here. But you know something? That stirs in my mind. It certainly stirred in my mind it doesn't seem to be happening right now, but does it stir in my mind the thought of who is God going to raise up to lead worship if Mike and Beth, because I believe God would have someone, that there would be someone in this assembly, either now or someone that he brings in, that would then do that. See, but what I like about this, and why I think this is a Kairos moment, it's not happening next week. It's not happening next month, because that's not how you would do it. That's not how God would do it. But what God would do is 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, a change happens, where now we have to decide, am I going to engage with God to take on the mantle of leadership, the mantle of involvement, the mantle of participation that God would have me to have? You know, what I find interesting about this passage here is that there's not only word for us in terms of how we prepare for the future, but it also has to do with how we conduct ourselves today. Is there a way for Living Hope Christian Church to be more organized, more structured? I think so, because I'm an organization guy. So I know my office defies that, but I really am an organization guy. But what's interesting is that when it comes to Jethro's advice with Moses, as they're dealing with legal decisions, Like, that's their concern. You got all these millions of people, thousands of people, how many Israelites there are. They're coming with conflict and disagreements and disputes. And they have to leave. See, that's not our need. But what we need is care. What we need is people that have a particular desire and heart for people that say, you know something, I care for people. And when someone comes to church, I'm going to make sure that person feels cared for. You know, that is one of the primary things that I speak to in terms of the elders and deacons, in terms of what I would have them to do here at Living Hope Christian Church. Because I believe that when it comes, see, you don't need legal decisions that are made. You know, you don't have to have a sense when you walk into church, okay, you know, if I have a dispute with this person that sits next to me, I'd better know who to talk to. No, but you want to walk into church, you have a sense that someone cares about you. And see, that's something you can do right now. You don't need to be an elder. You don't need to be a deacon. You don't need to have a position to decide that God's role for you in any body of believers, is to say, you know something, I'm going to express care for the people that are here. Because that's the need of today. It's the contagious love that comes from believers that is the most attractive thing to unbelievers. They'll know you're Christians by your love one for another. So I think that there's something significant that God is trying to tell us, what God is trying to prepare us for in terms of us being in Exodus 18 at this time. No, I mean, it could have been like 4 weeks from now, 2 weeks ago. I'm just saying in this season of where we are within the last 3 months, there's just something significant about what's going on now in terms of what God is doing. Just note, well, you know, some we're out of time, so I can do this next week, but let me just wrap up by just notice that even though Jethro is saying, Moses, you need to make this decision. Notice in verse 23, if you do this and God so commands. Now, Jethro understands that I'm giving you advice, but if God says this isn't okay, if this isn't the way to structure things, then don't. Maybe I'll just finish the story. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel, made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. I mean, the thing we'll have to pick up next week is the character piece. Is a piece where he says, choose these types of men in terms of them being God-fearing, them not seeking dishonest gain, and the other one. And also let me say this, that I have some thoughts that are impressed on me from this passage in terms of how we can do things here in terms of a more organized way, but I would want to talk to the leadership before I talk to you about that. But just think, particularly if you have that heart for people, where you desire to care for people in a coordinated way, which I mean, hate that, because care isn't coordinated, care isn't legislated. But just think of that in terms of your heart to care for people and how that might happen here at Living Hope Christian Church. Let's bow and let's pray. Father, we do thank you that you have brought us here. I thank you for what you have accomplished here among us at Living Hope through Rick and Kelly. I know that for a time frame they will still be with us, and we're grateful for that. We just pray that you guide them, that you show us what we should do in regards to the call that Rick believes that he has on his life. And so, Father, I just pray that you guide us in this process. Father, even as we are getting quotes in for parking lots and so on and so forth, I just pray for guidance in that now I feel far more comfortable dealing with the decisions around Rick than I do with the parking lot. And so, Father, protect us. Father, just keep us. Show yourself in that whole process about how you're guiding us to the person that should do that work. Father, for everyone else, I just pray to the extent your Spirit is convicting people in their hearts, that you could just continue to move, continue to show, continue to reveal just what the so what is. What are you leading us to be? What are you leading us to do because of what we've heard today? It's in your Son, Jesus Christ's name, that we do pray. Amen.